Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Liu, MD, about the use of tepotinib in patients with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer harboring MET exon 14 skipping alterations. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Liu discussed key efficacy and safety findings from the Phase 2 VISION trial that led to the FDA approval of tepotinib for this indication, the comparable response rates seen between tissue and liquid biopsy results as well as across treatment lines, and the importance of early biomarker testing, including RNA sequencing, to identify actionable mutations and optimize treatment. Talking about the evolving use of tepotinib in non-small cell lung cancer, can you just start off by briefly describing the rationale and design of the VISION trial that investigated this agent in non-small cell lung cancer with MET exon 14 skipping mutations?
The VISION study was a phase 2 study, open label, looking at tepotinib, which is a MET tyrosine kinase inhibitor, in patients with non-small cell lung cancer who have a MET exon 14 skip mutation. This is a subset of patients that's pretty important. While it's a minority of patients with lung cancer that have this alteration, it's not a rare alteration, with approximately 5% of patients will have this detected. I think it's important to test for it because we do have effective drugs like tepotinib. And in the VISION study, patients could be enrolled if that MET exon 14 mutation was detected on tissue biopsy, but also if it was detected solely on liquid biopsy. And so I think this was an important wrinkle there. Regardless of how you find that, tepotinib was shown to be effective. In this patient population, which tends to be a little bit older, it is important to identify effective drugs. And so the use of tissue or a liquid to identify the MET exon 14 mutation, I think, was an important wrinkle in the VISION study.
So then what were some of the key efficacy findings from this study that were initially reported?
Well, in the VISION study, tepotinib was administered as monotherapy, and what we saw were fairly high response rates. The overall response rate, a confirmed response rate by independent review, was 46%. And these responses were durable, with a median duration of response of over 11 months. If we look specifically at those with a MET exon 14 mutation identified with liquid biopsy, the response rate 48%. In those with tissue biopsy used to detect the MET exon 14, response rate 50%. So really, regardless of how that MET exon 14 mutation is identified, liquid biopsy or tissue biopsy, this is an effective drug. And it certainly makes sense in this day and age, but now we have that confidence to use either liquid or tissue. A lot of patients do have positive results on both assays. The investigator assessed response rate a bit higher at 56%, and that was regardless of previous therapy, whether first line or later lines of treatment. This is an effective drug, and the VISION study really showed the responses were frequent and were of high quality with fairly durable responses, really cementing it as an effective option for patients with lung cancer and a MET exon 14 mutation. All subgroups with MET exon 14 mutation do benefit from the use of tepotinib in an update from Dr. Shuning Li. We looked at a breakdown by prior lines of therapy. And in the treatment-naive setting, using tepotinib as the first-line therapy for advanced non-small cell lung cancer with MET exon 14, really that response rate, 45%, I think 44.9% formally. In those with prior treatment, very similar, with a response rate of 44.6%. Duration of response, similar, around 11 months for both groups. This is an effective drug regardless of line of therapy in the frontline setting. High response rates, durable responses with those with prior therapy, can high responses and durability too. So an effective drug across lines, no specific subgroup that I would exclude from the use of tepotinib. And really over time, this has become my preferred first line treatment option.
How does the tepotinib data that we've been talking about really show the importance of patients with MET positive disease receiving the right treatment at the right time?
So I think overall, when you look at these high response rates for tepotinib, it really gives us the confidence to prescribe this medicine. When we look at the different subtypes, different molecular alterations within lung cancer, there are slightly different phenotypes, and MET exon 14 mutations tend to be a slightly older population, an older population where you might have some concerns about the safety or tolerability of different regimens. And to be able to give a drug with a very high response rate that's well tolerated, I think is even more important in that patient subset. When we look at the VISION data, seeing those response rates just below 50% and durable responses really gives patients an effective option. So to me, targeting MET when detected is really something I try to do in the frontline setting, giving patients a convenient, well-tolerated option that can provide durable responses fairly reliably. And I think that use of tepotinib in the earlier lines of therapy really is justified and I think best practice.
What safety considerations are important to remember when using tepotinib?
So all of our agents do have important toxicity profiles. When we think of targeted therapy, they are different from target to target. There are some that I would consider class effects, and chief among them is peripheral edema. Most patients will experience some edema, about 63%. Now, only about 7% tend to be grade 3. In my own experience, it also is something that's a little more likely if we're on the drug for a long period of time. You can see other GI toxicities such as nausea and diarrhea. You can see some lab abnormalities like low albumin, a rise in creatinine, and sometimes a rise in amylase and lipase. But far and away, I think the most clinically relevant toxicity is that edema. We want to counsel patients so that we're prepared for it. And if it is severe, it's important to integrate dose holds, dose modifications early, because those are really the more effective maneuvers in terms of managing that edema. Diuretics are sometimes used. You have to be careful. A lot of times this is sort of third spacing, some of the fluid. And with overdiuresis, we can see a rise in creatinine. We can see volume depletion. So we want to be careful. It doesn't always respond perfectly well to diuresis. It can be helpful. But generally, if the edema is of a significant enough nature, it really would be dose holds, dose interruptions, and dose reductions as needed.
What are some strategies that can be used just across the board to identify actionable mutations as early as possible in non-small cell?
We consider overall METex14 and tepotinib. This is an effective drug. It's a well-tolerated drug that I try to use early on for unclear reasons. When we give targeted therapy after immunotherapy, the toxicity profile seems to be a little exaggerated. I'm not sure why that happens, but it really is across different targets. Certainly, we see that with EGFR, with ALK. And so because of that wrinkle of targeted therapy, I try to use targeted therapy first before integrating immunotherapy. This is a subset that can benefit from immunotherapy, but I like to start with targeted therapy. And if that's not tolerated, not effective, at that point, I would switch to immunotherapy-based treatments. I think it's important to find these targets early for that reason. So we can give targeted therapy early where I think it's safer. So we can give what can be an effective and well-tolerated regimen and a regimen that can work for many years for a lot of patients. So it's important that all of our patients get that necessary biomarker testing as part of the diagnosis. And there are some alterations where RNA sequencing can offer a little bit greater sensitivity in finding these alterations. METex14 mutations, this is not one mutation. This is many different mutations that are all related at the same functional consequence, but there are a lot of different alterations. And some of them, due to a lot of repeats or sort of due to where that alteration is, might be missed with DNA-based next-gen sequencing. So to really get full coverage, we'd like to do both DNA and RNA sequencing. It's going to help find more METex14 mutations, going to find more ROS1 fusions, ALK fusions, NRG1 fusions, NTRK fusions. These are often more likely to be found on RNA. It might be missed if we're only doing DNA. So I do think it's important we understand the metrics and the analytics of the test that we're doing. DNA and RNA will maximize yield. And if we can't miss any of these alterations, which I think we can't, we really should be doing both on all patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.